This program is brought to you by Haymarket Books as part of the Socialism 2024 program. You can hear more recordings from the conference by subscribing to the Socialism Conference podcast feed. Many video recordings are also available at socialismconference.org. If you enjoy these recordings, you should join us at Socialism 2025, which will be held in Chicago next summer, July 3rd through the 6th, 2025. If you are ready to put ideas into action and get organized with others from across the country and the world, make a plan with your organization and your friends to come to the Socialism Conference.
Up over my head,
up over my head,
I see freedom in the air,
I see freedom in the air.
Up over my head,
up over my head,
I see freedom in the air,
I see freedom in the air.
Up over my head,
up over my head,
freedom in the air,
I see freedom in the air.
And I really do believe,
and I really do believe,
a change is coming out there,
a change is coming.
Come on, sing with us. Up over my head,
up over my head,
we see love in the air,
I see love in the air.
Up over my head,
up over my head,
I see love in the air,
I see love in the air.
Up over my head,
up over my head, love in the air,
and I really do believe,
and I really do believe,
I said I really do believe,
yes I really do believe,
I said now do you believe,
I said now do you believe,
a change is coming out there,
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 a change is coming out there.
This joy that I have,
the world didn't give it to me.
No,
this joy that I have, the world didn't give it to me.
This joy,
this joy that I have,
the
world didn't give it to me.
No, no, no,
the world didn't give it, the world can't take it away. To me.
This strength that we have,
this strength that we have,
the world
didn't give it to me.
This dream that we have,
this dream that we have,
the world
didn't give it to me.
No, no, no,
the world didn't give it, the world can't take it away.
How is everyone? Good. Okay. I had a request. I'm wondering if people in the back, well, first, there's a fan on your seat or should have been in your seat. Can folks wave these fans in the air? Yeah. If you don't have a fan right now, I know that you're feeling some type of way. I know that you feel it in your heart that you want a fan. In order for you to get a fan, you have to move up. You have to move up. Can y'all keep waving these fans in the air and tell folks to move up? Move up. Thank you. Thank you.
It's so wonderful to see you all this evening. Can you just turn to your neighbor and say, you look beautiful this evening? Ain't nobody turn to me and tell me that I look beautiful. My name's Niall Fort, and I am so excited, happy, humbled, grounded to be here with you all, each and every single one of you in this room today, and with my comrades, my friends, my colleagues who've come together under the banner of Sunday School, which I'll explain in a minute, and Dear Gaza, which my sister Delaney will explain in a minute. I was about 24 or so years old in 2014. I think I was 25 or so. I had just finished graduate school. I had watched a young man by the name of Michael Brown Jr. get killed by a cop on Canefield Drive in a small little suburb outside of St. Louis called Ferguson, Missouri. The police left his body on the ground for 4.5 hours in the hot baking sun. And a community there said, we're never gonna let that ever happen again and let death have the last word. So they rose up, they popped off, they stepped outside, and they did something about it. And that's a part of the reason why we're here. And that's a part of the reason why I'm here. When I was in the streets of Ferguson, I met some amazing people, some of whom are here today, some of whom have helped organize this amazing event. And those people start telling me about a place that I only really knew through the Bible, this place called Palestine. I had no idea what they were talking about. I learned about Palestine in Sunday school growing up. And I had no idea that what was happening on the other side of the Atlantic had anything to do with what was happening right with us in Ferguson and where I was from in Newark and where people were from in Atlanta and in Oakland. And a group called the Dream Defenders, which we'll talk about in a minute. They really put me on game, and they said, look, the tear gas canisters that they're using out here in the streets, the police that are being militarized in full riot gear out here in the streets that are intimidating us and harassing us, they are in bed with the same police officers, the same oppressors, the same establishment that's being run to brutalize black communities here in the United States are doing the same thing across the Atlantic in Palestine. And so they invited me to go. And in 2016, I walked the streets with other Dream Defenders in Ramallah and in the West Bank, and my palms touched the apartheid wall. And I wept in the middle of those streets, watching those Palestinian babies play with toys outside of that wall. Walked the school for hours, even though the school was really just a few feet away because they had to snake through all of that concrete just to learn. So I'm here because of real stories, because of real love, because of real care. And this program, Sunday School Mixed with Dear Gaza, comes out of that. If you've ever been an organizer for a little bit in your life, you might know that we can do really good at thinking about things. Anybody know that? Real good. And if you're like me, you might be one of those people who don't like to ask, you know, what you don't know, because stuff will be coming up on conferences and panels. You'd be like, I have no idea what they're talking about. Anybody like that? Is you scared to ask, like, what does that mean? All these isms. And Sunday school really grew out of this idea that, yes, in order to win, and we will win. In order to win, yes, we have to change our mind, but we also have to change our hearts and our souls. And so Sunday school was really an expression, an experiment, and talking about what is the spiritual life of our social movements. What does it mean not only for us to change policies, not for us to only change practices, but for us to actually change who we are as people? And so Sunday School, which was organized by the Dream Defenders a few years ago, is really an expression of just that, that what it means for us to win is not just for us to win housing, education, for us to abolish prisons and police, it's for us to abolish the prisons and police that are in our hearts and in our souls. So we're excited today, the Dream Defenders, to be mashing up Sunday School with another very dear program to us called Dear Gaza, and I'm going to bring up Delaney to talk a bit about that.
It's so wild, y'all. Every time I speak after Niall, I'm like, damn. What am I going to say? But to Niall's point, I was, I think, 17 while Niall was in relationship with Dream Defenders and about to go to Palestine. And I wasn't about to go to Palestine. I didn't know what, where, who. I didn't know what that was. But what I did have was Twitter. And I watched folks tweet about Palestine. I was like, what are we talking about? And what does this have to do with black people? What does this have to do with me? And in a moment where the occupation and oppressors are trying to wedge, build a deep wedge between black folks and Palestinian folks, it's time right now to remember the solidarity that we've had for years and years and years and years. And so after October 7th, when the resistance resisted, folks came together and said, wait, we have to build and curate a space for people to come together and have conversations about what we learned a couple years ago about the relationships between Palestine, those systems there, and the ones that are here in the United States of America that are oppressing us too. And Derica, myself, Clarissa, Niall came up with this idea of Dear Gaza, Love Notes on Black and Palestinian Solidarity. And this event is made to bring us together how we are in this room. Look to your neighbor and say, hey, neighbor. Because we're all here together. And it's meant to do that, to bring us together, to build community, and write some letters to folks in Gaza. And in Palestine. I'm not going to explain all of that right now because we've got some more stuff to do, but I will explain that later. But we're here to do that, to build community, to love on each other, to ask each other questions, and to share information and be in community and have a good time. That's it. I think next on the agenda, I can't remember.
So we're going to have two amazing people from Chicago actually read letters that they wrote to people in Gaza. So we've done this about five or six times. This is, I think, our sixth time in Atlanta, in Harlem, in Washington, D.C., here in Chicago. We've collected close to 1,000 letters at this point, which are going to be translated into Arabic. And so this is a part of this letter writing campaign. And we have two amazing people here from Chicago who have written letters to people in Gaza. And we want to bring them up to share their letters with us. Is that all right? All right. So we can have Damon and Aislinn. We're going to have Damon first, and then Aislinn, if you can come after Damon. Please greet Damon with a real, real good greeting.
Much love, y'all. How y'all feeling? My name is Damon Williams. I'm with the Let Us Breathe Collective and Respair Production and Media, and it's an honor to be in this space with y'all, to be here with the Dream Defenders. So I went down to the Dream Defenders National Convening this year, and I got a T-shirt, and I'm not a Dream Defender, but I invite the confusion. So I wore it on purpose because I look up to them, and it always means so much to share space with y'all. So thank you for holding this and gathering us in this way. Dear Gaza, I love you. I say this with every fiber of my being. I know this because loving you has tested the limits of my understanding of love and its value in my commitment to liberation. What you are suffering, enduring, and surviving has forced me to question and commanded me to remember. For a decade now, I have steadfastly professed my orientation to the world being rooted in a love-based, anti-violent, revolutionary tradition. Love being defined as a process of action and mode of being, more than a feeling or sentiment. This love is not static, but a dynamic interplay of acknowledgement, appreciation, nurturance, and protection. And that this interplay, our love, can push us beyond a passive nonviolence to actively existing as an antithesis or a negation or a counterforce to violence. Your struggle forced me to question what I thought was unquestionable. But in the face of this unthinkable destruction, is this enough? What value is our mutual aid, our marches, our rhymes, our healing circles in the face of this? Through your screams, I've learned how truly vulnerable our love is and how equipped the forces of anti-love are to make it nearly impossible to acknowledge, to appreciate, to nurture, to protect with the force of their violence. I had to humble myself because my belief in love did not seem to be enough. I had to re-ask questions I thought I moved well beyond with answers that once seemed set in stone. Your struggle has made me remember, for it is familiar. I remember the genocidal violence our indigenous people have survived. I taste the smoke of white supremacist race riots that suffocated and charred black bodies across this land. I am reminded of our mandate to resist as we stumble through land acknowledgments that feel part memorial, part concession. An unwarranted and incomplete victory tacitly awarded to the looters. This land was not once the land of Native people that now belongs to a monstrosity. This is still Native land being occupied by forces of anti-love. What does my heightened disgust for your settlers remind me about the settlers here on Turtle Island? And what does it mean to share a name with them? A name branded into my flesh. Last September, in this room, I gathered with Dream Defenders and pondered the spiritual lessons movement has taught me, unaware of what October would bring. I offered that movement has taught me how to grieve and how to take the responsibility of being more human. The next day, I claimed that we are in a revolutionary process continuing a legacy stewarded by elders of the Black radical tradition. All of this is true. If this is true, you have courageously served as spirit guides, helping us skill up for what is required on this journey of transforming the world and transforming ourselves. You have taught us that solidarity is not just an expression of moral altruism. It is also an opening, a channel for reciprocity, unsealing a portal that can allow us to be who we say we are. You have taught us. You have taught us as you have shown up. As you showed up for Mike Brown, as you showed up for Eric Garner, as you showed up for Rekia Boyd, as you showed up for Laquan McDonald, as you showed up for Breonna Taylor, as you showed up, as you showed up, as you showed up, as you... We must continue to show up. Through your example, you have made clear that we must live up to our inheritance. A legacy of global alignment rooted in partnership and solidarity. We had known that we are supposed to think global and to be anti-imperialist, anti-war, anti-militarism, but for many of us, these notions were abstract and general. Your struggle has pushed us to be more specific and concrete. As my comrades and teachers have returned from visits from your sacred land, they have brought home the treasures of your dignity. You have strengthened our tongue, and with that increased might, we call out for Haiti and Congo louder than we had before. You have shown us what we need to protect. I honor the leadership of Palestinian movement builders whose leadership molded encampments from ocean to ocean. I think about the meals, the prayers, the dances, the teach-ins and history lessons. I think of Vivian Sansour, writer and founder of the Palestinian Seed Library, who named to me her refusal to become her oppressor. I honor her in Gaza, in Palestine, in your diaspora. I honor you. Your refusal to allow the height of inhumanity to turn you toward destruction has intensified the assignment to raise my humanity. I am expanded by witnessing you not fall over and not only remain upright, but help crutch and carry the loads of our limited collective humanity. You have put love to the ultimate test, and the perseverance of your spirit has demonstrated a power I could not fathom. Through you, I have questioned everything and been reminded of how steadfast we must be in what we oppose and how much more committed we must be in honoring the sacred and protecting love. Much love.
Hey y'all, I'm Aislinn. Hey, I'm in pain because I hurt my back carrying up stuff for our table at the conference, at this conference, so just bear with me. But if you want to check out our table, it's on the first floor. Dear Dr. Yasser Abu Jammeh, the wonderful Lena O'Day let me know that you are still alive. I have wondered whether you have survived the last 10 months of this horrific genocide. To call a genocide horrific is a bit redundant, isn't it? What else could it be aside from horror producing and terrorizing? When you visited the Chicago Torture Justice Center in January 2023, we were excited to connect with your work, as it is so similar to ours. As the 10-year Director General of the Gaza Community Mental Health Program, we were thrilled to connect with someone who so intimately also understands how intertwined and symbiotic the relationships between trauma, healing, and wellness are directed by environmental conditions, and more specifically, the ways in which resources and violence are distributed, waged, and withheld. This is a truth that colonial psychiatry and psychology are organized to unsee. They are limited in only traumas within direct interpersonal connections, absent of the oxygen in which they breathe. They become the fish in the ocean, unaware of the substance we call water. It is the project of colonialism itself that is the source of these traumas. Our realities tell us that the bombs dropped on apartment complexes, 100-year-old homes, and elementary schools, and children under the age of 18 held in police interrogation rooms, chained to walls struck with electrified wires on their body parts, are not merely stories of struggles with the id or ego, but the result of intentional distribution of life-ending violence by state forces. These traumas are not caused by an abstract concept of an Oedipus complex, but by deliberate political choices of governments to use human suffering to craft conditions of power through waging violence. And then we return to our people who have miraculously survived while so many others have not, and we sit with them. We share space. We say, I see the wounds too. And we complicate concepts like post-traumatic stress with the reality that the violence is ongoing. It is sustained, present, and future anticipated stress of violence, already experienced by whole populations collectively. There is past only in knowing that tomorrow's violence will become memory due only to the ever-flowing continuity of time, not because the violence has stopped. It is, of course, the violence of empire, of conquer, of conquest. It is the same violence of all colonialisms. The word settler sounds passive, as if it means merely to rest and sit, to settle. It hides what it actually does, which is push out, murder, destroy, in order to then stake claim to land over skulls and unburied bones. To sleep on top of skeletons is really what settlers do. They make mattresses of broken femurs and little girls' fingers who were shielding their eyes from the blast of exploding concrete. They sleep atop a graveyard of the people they murdered. But most of us will not die, although sometimes it feels as if the pain of witnessing massacre is a death too. And it is, in a way. We've learned that it is important and necessary to mourn. There is power in grief. It is important to name the feeling, to identify the gun and the bullet and whose hand it is pulling the trigger, because what they rely on is silence. The violence that is supposed to be ignored and the cries are supposed to be denied. That's why it is necessary to keep naming, to keep calling it out, to never ignore the monster in front of us. It is finite, despite its size. It is temporary, despite the totality in which our psyches feel shook. Imperial aggression has enormous cost, which far outweighs the concepts of win or lose. The collective witnessing has huge consequence. This is where we remember our ancestors, our generations, and hold their hands as we continue onward toward life as much as we can. And we cry together because that is how we survive. We hold on, and we know that our lives are intertwined and yet so uniquely individual. We will survive. We will outlive this terror. Not all of us, but at the same time, all of us. Not physically, but in consciousness. And that is what they cannot destroy. There are witnesses to this violence all over the world who cannot unsee what is happening. This collective witnessing has consequences. This collective witnessing exposes that the contradictions are too stark. This is what dislodges power and makes its ideological control weaker. Much like World War II enabled us to point back at the contradictions of colonial power internationally and domestically, revolutions are birthed here. Its reverberations open eyes and imaginations. This is their own future undoing. Much like climate crisis is fueled by the greed of capitalism, they are hanging themselves with their own rope. The problem now is that they are hanging us too. They think they are only killing us, torturing us, but they are there in the bloodshed too, holding the electrodes and the bombs. The question really, though, is how we can help, those of us called to work in this field of trauma. How can we help create space for people to tend to the wounds so that we can stop the violence? How can we build spaces wide enough for care to wrap our arms around each other, to hold the grief so massive it takes generations to process, so that there is enough breathing room to take them down now. How do we foster healing to stop the structures designed around murder so that the generations to come can carry on the banner of creating new societies organized around care, sharing, life nurturance, and life protection? That is why our healing is politicized. Let us heal enough to make it through to the next generations who will need to carry this belief and vision onward that we can create societies not organized around destruction and wealth extraction, but cultivation and nurturing of life in all its forms. We have to rest, too, and take care of ourselves. That is also a necessary part of this work. And I don't know how that is done, aside from remembering to feel when we can, when it is safe, and to name the monsters. The monsters who are not really monsters, but humans who have decided that their livelihoods require the murder and torture of others and have created whole belief systems to justify the violence, a long-held practice of the oppressors. When they ran over 23-year-old Rachel Corey with an Israeli bulldozer while she attempted to protect a home being demolished in Gaza, I wrote a poem dedicated to her, Angels Screaming. We were the same age, she and I. At dinner with Lena, we shared that she has lost 60 family members over the last 10 months. There was a week in February 2017 where five people were killed within days of each other. 25-year-old Chad Robertson was shot by an Amtrak cop while on a two-hour layover in Chicago waiting to board his next ride back home to Minneapolis after attending a wedding in Memphis. Precious 11-year-old Takaya Holmes, a member of Asada's Daughters, was shot in the head as she was waiting in a car outside a laundromat. I was with Chad's family at Stroger Hospital and drove directly to Comer Children's Hospital when I got the call. They both passed away, one after the other. I remember feeling incredible rage and confusion at how the rest of the world could just continue on without pause. I was angered when people said to me and my comrades that they were amazed at how much we were holding because I wanted to yell, "You need to hold this too." It is the jarring pain of survival and witnessing. I cannot fathom what it feels like to lose 60 people. I drank a lot that week and the weeks after. I coped through numbing. How are you coping, Lena? How are you coping, Dr. Yasser? I can feel now. I can cry. I have had nights of panic attacks and feeling as if I was dying too. And I know that the stress of the traumas have to be released somehow, so I try to find those outlets to let it out in ways that harm my body less and instead hopefully work toward healing. We are with you in spirit, Dr. Yasser, here in Chicago, away from the Israeli bombs, but right next to the police force they train. We are with you trying to also hold the grief and the rage and the pain and the tears. We hold your hands. You can fold into our arms and weep as we stand up boldly in the face of empire and stop the weapons manufacturers from business as usual. We are connected so many miles away. We are united through struggle and collective witnessing. We are crying too. We are fighting too. I hope this brings you some warmth, knowing that you are loved and cherished here. There will be a time when the last bomb explodes, and we will be there to dig through the rubble with you, to lay loved ones to rest, and we will be there as you rebuild stone by stone, brick by brick, as you have so often been there for us as we learned how to survive the tear gas attacks from you and Ferguson. The behemoth of imperialism has an end. The project of colonialism is not infinite. We are with you as we work to hold ourselves together while we steadfastly know that there are always more of us than them. It is in our bones, this will to live, this call to survive. As a people, we cannot be crushed. Our history tells us that we have always fought and we have always won. We are winning this one too. To breathe still is to resist. After all the wars, the sun still rises, the moon still sets, the oceans still flow, the birds still sing. We will outlast and defeat the greedy projects of oppression. We will outlast and defeat the greedy projects of imperialism. We are in the process of defeating them now. The seeds of life after colonialism have been deeply planted into the earth's soil. The seeds have already begun to sprout. The roots are stronger and older than their short-sighted concepts of profit. They don't know this, but that doesn't matter, because we do. This is their death knell. This is their funeral. We are still here. We are not going anywhere. We will win. With revolutionary love, Aislinn.
One more time for Aislinn. Something about culture, the thing about culture, and something that Aislinn said about how this love can wrap its arms around us. Culture, we need to make culture that wraps its arms around us. We need to be moved to wrap our arms around each other. And that's why we're here. So I'm going to introduce again the DD People's Choir to come up and sing a song. But they aren't just singing alone. This is for all of us to indulge and have a good time. So if you need to take a deep breath right quick, let's take a collective one. In through your nose. Out through your mouth. There we go. One more. In through your nose. Out through your mouth. That's beautiful. So it looked like everybody did that. So I'm expecting everybody to be singing along. Are we cool with that? Can you raise your fan in the air if you're cool with that? There we go. Okay, choir, take it away.
Yes, intimacy. I just want to acknowledge these wonderful people up on the stage behind me. Please give them a round of applause. The Dream Defenders, People's Choir. It is made up of not just Dream Defenders. We have others who wanted to volunteer their time, their energy, their hearts, and their voices to the collective that we are all a part of. So I want to shout out Steph from Brooklyn, New York. Also, Jayani, Sasha, Jeremiah, and Hannah from North Star. So I'm just excited that they wanted to collaborate with us and we can all stand here and be in love, struggle, and solidarity with one another. Ashe.
Ashe.
So I need everyone up on their feet to sing this next song with us. Because I believe that we will what?
Win.
That we will what?
Win.
That we will what?
Win.
I need us to act like it. Forget your perfect offering.
Forget your perfect offering.
Just ring the bells that still can ring.
Just ring the bells that still can ring.
There is a crack in everything.
There is a crack in everything.
Come on, that's how
the light
gets in.
That's how the light gets in.
That's how
the light
your perfect offering.
Forget your perfect offering.
Come on, just ring the bells that still can ring.
Just ring the bells that still can ring.
There is a crack in everything.
There is a crack in everything.
Oh,
that's how
the light gets in.
That's how the light gets in.
Your perfect offering.
Forget your perfect offering.
Just ring the bells that still can ring.
Just ring the bells that still can ring.
There is a crack in everything.
There is a crack in everything.
Oh,
that's how
the light gets in.
That's how the light gets in.
All right, so in July, I want to see some of y'all up here with your robes on. All right?
Y'all give it up for the DD People's Choir. Y'all can do better than that. Give it up for the DD People's Choir. Up next, we're going to have Ashley A.G. Green, who is the Membership Development Director of the Dream Defenders, come up and give some reflections. And after that, we will have Derricka Purnell provide a sermon for all of us. Please greet them with a hearty hand clap. Y'all can do better than that.
Good evening, y'all. Good night. You know, I'm still on East Coast time. And I'm not going to lie, this might be my bedtime. I am not a writer. I just talk a lot. So I do not have a letter to share with you, but I do have some reflections on revolutionary love. And when we were originally pulling together the design for this plenary, we were moving through the same feelings I imagine most people in this room have been struggling with outrage, with grief, with hopelessness, with resistance, with passion, with something bubbling up that kept trying to find a place to go. And the thing that we have been trying to use and help ground ourselves in this moment is revolutionary love. Now, let's be real, socialists, not big fans of love. I know that sounds weird. It's something too immaterial. I can't really explain it in a dialectic, you know. But I'm going to work to pull from some thinkers that I think can offer us a pathway towards love in this moment and help remind us of the urgency of love in this moment, because it is so easy to fall into all the other motions and forget about why love is core to the revolutions that we are working to build. Now, like I said before, I normally don't write, but it was important for me to actually put my thoughts down this time. I really take this opportunity seriously with you all, but my internet did not connect, so we're gonna wait for that Google to come up. That really feels like a plot by the ops. We have spent the past few days of this conference exploring some of the farthest corners of socialism in our modern times. And in that, we have laughed, we have cried, we've argued, questioned, discovered, found a little bit of agreement, probably a lot more disagreement, on any number of topics, from the climate crisis, to building organization, to fighting against the rise of fascism in this moment. And in all of that, for most of us, Palestine has been right on the edges or right at the forefront. I think if you just look at the programming itself, I don't know if I was in a session where we didn't talk about what's happening. I think that's a reflection of what is going on in our internal lives. So as we delve into this topic of revolutionary love, I really think that it's worth taking a second to reflect on hate. Hate is the currency of our oppressor, but it is also something worth exploring within ourselves. I am not here to make a moral judgment on hate. It is the inevitable conclusion of decades and centuries of indignities forced on us by imperialism, colonialism, and racial capitalism. The perversions of decency and humanity that manifest in being told that we must compete for our survival, that we must sit idly by as our families are expelled, that we must look away as our friends are beaten in the street by the police and military occupying forces. And all of that we should hate. The systems our oppressors have built to cage us are revolting, and our hatred of them propels us ever closer to revolution. However, while we might find justification there, it is not in that hatred that we find our revolutionary spirit. Revolution is an act of love. Love for ourselves, love for our people, and love for the planet that we live on. Che Guevara references this in his letter, Socialism and Man in Cuba, with the oft-quoted refrain, "At the risk of seeming ridiculous, let me say that the true revolutionary is guided by great feelings of love. It is impossible to think of a genuine revolutionary lacking this quality." He goes on to say, our vanguard revolutionaries must idealize this love of the people, the most sacred causes, and make it one and indivisible. We must strive every day so that this love of living humanity is transformed into actual deeds, into acts that serve as examples, as a moving force. Often in our society, we are sold a feckless idea of love. We are force-fed empty platitudes by liberals of needing to challenge the hatred of our oppressors with a turn-the-other-cheek approach, a sentimentality that belittles our valid grievances. And in this vein, love starts to feel like an excess or a supplement to the revolutionary. And that feeling gets passed on to our movement spaces. For all the care workers in this building, I know that you have felt like your work has been treated as a side dish, as a thing that comes after the protest and the policy making and the organization building. But it's the main course. It's a grave mistake, and that is part of what Guevara is highlighting. It is in transforming our love for people into actual deeds, into building genuine communities of care, that we find our revolutionary spirit and power. And Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. really drives home this point in his speech, "Where Do We Go From Here?" when he says, "We've got to get this thing right. What is needed is a realization that power without love is reckless and abusive, and that love without power is sentimental and anemic. Power at its best is love implementing the demands of justice, and justice at its best is love correcting everything that stands against justice." I mean, that was Dr. King preaching, but, you know, I'll say that words, you know. We are in a moment of tremendous grief. Grief so heavy that it feels like it may swallow us whole. But that grief is also a manifestation of love. And we must honor and nurture and carry it as a foundation of our resistance. We still see love every day in the streets of Gaza, in the people feeding cats, making tea, laboring over food, the kids laughing while kicking a football. If they can find love through the relentless horrors, then we can too. And you know, Mahmoud Darwish once said, "Love is the most Palestinian part of me. My love poems are a reflection of my love as a Palestinian." He said, if I write love poems, I resist the conditions that don't allow me to write love poems. And so we need to carry that spirit. Capitalism is designed to make us feel worthless, to feel empty, so that we are constantly consuming in order to fill a hole that our oppression has created. And that consumption is impossible for even the staunchest of socialists to avoid. Most of us spend hours upon hours online, taking in every bit of information we can find about what's happening in our world. And while we have to bear witness to the atrocities unfolding in Gaza, the same algorithm bombards us with messages of hopelessness, manufacturing the belief that the world is against us. But the world is with us, as we are with Gaza, as we are with Palestine, as we are with Haiti, as we are with Sudan, as we are with the Congo, as we are with all people fighting for freedom and liberation, not in the next lifetime, but in this one. I appreciate y'all. I know they're trying to get me to wrap up, so I'm gonna move. Thank y'all. That felt special. Capitalism helps create this alienation, but I wanna take a moment to actually break that down. So, I'm gonna invite you to turn to your neighbor. All right, you turn it, make eye contact. And say, neighbor, I see you. I love you. I am grateful to be in struggle with you. Turn to the person that you didn't speak to next to you. And we gonna run it back. Neighbor, I see you. I love you. I am grateful to be in this world with you. And if that felt a little bit weird, I want to challenge you to break the alienation that you might be experiencing in this space. There is nothing but abundance right here. There is nothing but opportunity right here. There is nothing but a chance for us to live out a love ethic. What about socialism propels us to love? What does it mean to love as a revolutionary? As I said before, I can't explain it in dialectical terms, but I can explain it as a dream defender. And as a dream defender, we move by something introduced to us by bell hooks called a love ethic. Let me know if you've heard about a love ethic. In All About Love, Hooks writes, commitment to a love ethic transforms our lives by offering us a different set of values to live by. In large and small ways, we make choices based on a belief that honesty, openness, and personal integrity need to be expressed in public and private decisions. Embracing a love ethic means we must utilize all the dimensions of love: care, commitment, trust, responsibility, respect, and knowledge in our everyday lives. We can successfully do this by cultivating awareness. Being aware enables us to critically examine our actions to see what is needed so that we can give care, be responsible, show respect, and indicate a willingness to learn. To our lives based on these principles of a love ethic, showing care, respect, knowledge, integrity, and the will to cooperate, we have to be courageous. Learning how to face our fears is one way we embrace love. Our fear might not go away, but it will not stand in the way. Now, for the Maoists in the room, you can also find that in combat liberalism. Okay? There's a text for you too. Simple acts of love can transform the fabric of our being. A kind word of affirmation, a hug from a cherished person, an offer of a meal from a comrade, a letter from a stranger that says we see you and we refuse to look away. And that's what we're asking of you tonight, to engage in a simple act of love, to write a letter in the hopes that it fortifies someone's spirit in the darkest of times. Thank you all so much.
Wow, y'all ready to go home? No, okay, one person is ready to stay. Hi, everyone. How are you all doing? Amazing. I absolutely adore Sunday School and Dear Gaza, and so grateful that we get to do both together. So thank you all for choosing to stay. I feel like the people who stay at the end are the real conference ride or die. So thank you all for staying at the end. So I have three titles, and you can vote with your heart on which one you prefer for what I'm about to share. The first title is The Future of Revolutionary Love in a Time of Grief. The second title is Set the World on Fire. And the third title is The Fire Inside. Part one. I think of the future with the same energy that I think of a party. Not a political party, but like a house party. Eager, yet suspicious. Who's coming? Who all gonna be there? Are we gonna make it? Equally important, I think, what will be there? And will it include this planet? The earth is on fire, and I cannot help but to think about the intersections between capitalism, the carceral state, colonialism, climate catastrophe, and what is required of each and every one of us to navigate the terrain. There are many fires that cause us grief. In DC, where I live, there is up to a 20 degree difference between how wealthy white people and poor black people experience the exact same day. To quote my second favorite rapper, Lil Wayne, the block is hot. Hot blocks lead to disputes, more policing, more conflict, more violence, more imprisonment, more suffering. By one estimate, in David Wallace Wells' The Uninhabitable Earth, climate change in the United States, and hear me, will bring about an additional 22,000 murders, 180,000 rapes, 3.5 million assaults, 3.76 million robberies, burglaries, and acts of grand larceny. Who's here from California? California, it's hot in California. This summer, just in August, just early, late July or August, California had been burning with the fifth largest fire in its history. It's larger than Los Angeles and 12 times the size of San Francisco. The fires have been burning in St. Louis, my hometown, just 4 hours away, three if I'm driving, where we just commemorated the 10-year anniversary of where Michael and Leslie lost their precious baby, Michael Brown Jr., on August 9th. The fires are scorching the flesh of our Palestinian siblings, their babies, the earth in Gaza, the West Bank, Yemen, Congo, Sudan, and most recently in Lebanon. These destructive fires just don't weigh in on our flesh. They weigh on our souls. And when I feel anxiety, I often describe it as ashes floating in my body with no exit. But lucky for us, the fires are not only a source of destruction and grief. They are also sources of generation and love. And in fact, revolutionary fires and revolutionary love have everything to do with each other, and we are responsible for making the connections. On August 9th, but this time not 2014, all the way back in 1944, the federal government birthed Smokey the Bear. Do y'all know Smokey the Bear? Okay, all right, cool, I wasn't sure. So Smokey the Bear, do y'all remember what he used to say? All right, look at y'all, I see some millennials, some Gen X, okay, I feel it in the room. So being a Midwestern girl growing up listening to Nelly, I didn't really know about the world of forest fires, right? They only existed on television, but I do remember that bear. So this campaign was used to deter fires, but it was actually propaganda to protect the trees that were being cut down by logging capitalists. And you can't sell a tree that's ashes. The fires threatened the logging businesses, while simultaneously, the logging businesses cut down trees and it caused more fires. Blowing your mind, I see it all in your face, Ash. Trees provide shade and absorb carbon dioxide to keep the planet cool. When corporations cut trees, the planet gets hotter. So Smokey the Bear was a colonial campaign to discourage indigenous people from setting fires to the land where trees could be sold for profit. And beginning in 1850, California had even banned the ritualistic burnings by tribes. Now, before these burnings were criminalized, right, these tribes used to set small, intentional fires to clear all the decay underneath the forest so it wouldn't catch fire later. These controlled burnings were a revolutionary love collaboration between humans and the earth and decreased the kind of wild, destructive fires that we see now. So that corporations could make money, California threatened indigenous peoples with arrest in jails for trying to save it. Almost 12,000 years of native land management systems nearly went up in flames. And then, to make matters worse, California began using prison labor to fight the fires, right? So the carceral state became the response to the capitalist problem that colonialism created. Now, here's the thing. I'm not going to say no names, but there was a certain black woman who's running for president who defended this prison labor. But we can talk about that in another socialism conference. Instead of addressing the underlying problems of capitalism and deforestation that came from the exploitation of the earth, California responded by putting a cute, aggressive bear on television and relying on the exploding prison population to risk their lives. This failure, right, only recently started forcing officials in California to run back to the indigenous wisdom to try to figure out how to save it. And so now there's all of this important work of reclaiming that history and those practices. When I think about this, I get pissed off. I feel the anger. I feel anger because had this land remained in the stewardship of the people who live there, we would have a cleaner, cooler earth. But now, in panic, how y'all know when people panic? They start running to indigenous people. What do? They try to sprinkle this wisdom on top of capitalism and on top of colonialism. It's similar to a land acknowledgement. We get up here, we sprinkle it on top of our statements, our speeches, our meetings, our conferences. It's not true decolonization. The lesson here is that there are destructive fires that are related to this exploitation and revolutionary fires that come from a place of deep love and deep care. And if we are wholly committed to loving each other, we cannot allow destructive fires to wreak havoc on our bodies, on our communities, and on our planet. And nor can we just sprinkle some indigenous wisdom on top of it. We need revolutionary love in order to set the kinds of fires we need to save us. Part two. Let's talk about trees and fires in Palestine. Since Israel began taking land from Palestinians, the consequences have been deadly for hundreds of thousands of people and the environment alike. According to the Institute for Middle Eastern Understanding, Israel has destroyed millions of trees since its founding and replaced it with European trees to hide the ruins of Palestinian communities. This has led to widespread agricultural disruption, increases in flooding and fires, and more droughts in the region. Earlier this week, an Israeli airstrike killed 19-year-old Medo Halimi. Halimi was known online to document his life gardening under the current genocidal siege. He said, quote, "Planting for me is a form of resistance. They're taking away life, but I'm bringing it to earth." Halimi's daily practice of land stewardship, even under siege, shows us the greatest example of the revolutionary fire inside each of us, one that becomes a revolutionary love displayed outside of us between the planet. Now let me ask you a question. Have either of you, any of you, ever been in love? Have you been in revolutionary love? Have you had a revolutionary fire inside of yourself? A revolutionary fire is about finding the will to do what's best for yourself, for your neighbor, for your people, even when it hurts, even when you don't want to, even when you have to sacrifice, even if you aren't sure you're going to win. The commitment is the practice of love. You know that the pursuit is worth the struggle to make something grow, even if you do not live to see it. That is deep revolutionary love. Being a revolutionary love means not to be burdened by whether something you're experiencing, I know this from relationships, if it's gonna make it. But it's being committed to understanding that the love that you are experiencing will completely enrich you in the kind of human being you are. And that is important to help shape the world around you. Part three, fire is neutral. It can take a teenager's life on a poor suburban street like it did Michael Brown's. It can burn down a hospital after a bomb has been dropped. It can sterilize a medical tool to save a life. It can save a forest. It can start a revolution. I know that many of us are tired. I know some of y'all are tired right now, even when I'm telling you that you're tired. But we need people who are fired up. We need people willing to set revolutionary fires inside of themselves and commit to burning down the systems that cause us pain, that cause us to hurt each other. And in Meadow's honor, I ask each of you to continue to light the fire, the revolutionary fires inside of us, and to practice the revolutionary world that we need. And we have so many examples, I'm sure, right here in this room. Can you raise your hand or your heart if you've been a part of an encampment? Can you raise your hand of your heart if you've disrupted a politician? If you've been a part of mutual aid? If you participated in unpaid political organizing work? If we're gonna start destructive fires, then let's put that behind us. But with revolutionary fires, the ones that each of you have already set, we can respond, coincidentally, like trees to the destruction. So my favorite trees are the redwoods. I'm gonna go back to California, the tallest trees on earth. In 2021, right after I finished becoming abolitionist, I took a road trip and we hiked through the redwoods. And y'all know the people who lead you on the hike, they have their vests, they have their shoes tied real tight because they know what they're doing. And they told us in that hike not to go off path. And I said, okay, why can't we go off path? Like, these are the beautiful trees, you know. And they said, well, even though redwoods are about 350 feet tall, their roots are really shallow. They only go down about 6 to 13 feet. The roots, though, the power is not the depth. The power is in the connection. They run far and wide. They communicate to each other. They redistribute resources. They create the conditions for other trees to heal. There is a system that humans will say, well, there's a hierarchy and there's a mother tree. But the mother tree is not about domination. The mother tree is about redistributing all what's in the forest to make sure nothing is wasted. No tree can be dominated. The trees have even developed a resistance to destructive fires. And this is not only true for the redwoods. Guess what else is true for? Guess what other kind of trees? Olive trees. Olive trees, right? Olive trees are fire resistant. And even though they can experience so much destruction, they are still able to produce fruit. Do you know how incredible that is? That after the destruction of capitalism, colonial bears down on you to be able to produce fruit. They can survive long periods of drought because they prepare, they store moisture, and they retain it for extended periods of time. So when capitalists, colonizers, or even some of y'all college presidents attempt to destroy what we or the earth has built, we must be prepared. We must borrow from the preparation, adaptability, and regenerative practices of redwoods and olive trees. And similarly, if we look at the indigenous practices pre-colonization, pre-capitalism, we find the same harmonious relationships for survival. We know that they were small anarchists. They primarily functioned from not a domination perspective, but from social cohesion to make sure everyone contributed to the pot and everyone had it what they need, right? There were small seed communes. People worked, but they didn't have to sell their labor for rent. They didn't have to sell their labor for food or to see a doctor or to see a dentist. They didn't have to be, me and Delaney was talking about this, on a wait list for 6 months to establish care. If you hurt right now, you get help right now. And equally important, as we see in Medo Halimi, they possess a harmonious relationship to the earth. And there can be no true justice between any of us unless there is justice between us and this planet. This is what is at stake with our work. This is what is at stake with the future of revolutionary love. So let us continue to spark the fires inside of us. Thank you.
One more time for AG and Derica. Like, very demure. Yeah. Okay, so we talked about this a little bit at the start about the action that we're going to take, and that is to write letters to folks in Palestine. What you will find, those beautiful fans that I've asked you to wave 100 times by now, with that, you'll find a sheet of paper and a pen. You've heard a lot of different letter lengths this evening. And there is not a particular one that you need to have, but what I will say is that you have like 7 minutes. You do have time after to continue writing. But before that, before we write, we have one more person who's going to share quickly, but start thinking about what you are going to write, what you would want to hear, what you feel like you need to say. We had folks in D.C. We had kids. That's my favorite part of Dear Gaza, if I'm honest, is the children that come. And they were drawing pictures. They were drawing pictures of themselves and Palestinian kids playing on a playground because that's what they had to offer. There are folks who just wrote a song lyric. People are doing their best to share what's on their heart, and so that's what we're gonna ask of you. But before that, we have one more speaker. Please make your way up here. Can y'all give it up for our next speaker?
I'm gonna be honest with all of you. I do not have something amazing like Derica wrote. I'm like, wow, they put me right after her. But that was beautiful, Derica. Hi, my name is Nasreen Hassan. I am a Palestinian organizer here in Chicago. I've been organizing for 15 years, and welcome to Chicago for those who are not from here. You are in the city with the largest concentration of Palestinians. So I'm here representing the United States Palestinian Community Network, and I'm also representing the Palestinian Feminist Collective. And I'm here to share with you all a call to action. I know we're exhausted with all the actions we've taken, but I just want to let you all know, us Palestinians here, the Arab community here, and those back home really appreciate all that you do. And it's very important that you don't stop. I want to say, I know election season's coming up, and this government, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, are trying to divide our communities. I think a call to action is please don't give in to the divisiveness, and please let's stick together and continue conversations with each other, because that's what they want, the divide and conquer mechanism. So it's very important. We know that, you know, the Democrats are already blaming Palestinians and the Republicans are ready to eat us alive. So that's the commonality. But we are still asking for all of you to pressure your local legislators. I know electoral politics is not all the all and be all, but please continue to disrupt, continue to protest. If you're still here in Chicago by tomorrow and your flight ain't till later, please come to the Chicago Coalition for Justice in Palestine protest that's happening in downtown at 1 p.m. and experience a Palestinian protest here in Chicago with the largest concentration. Like Derica said, that it's just very important for us to uplift. They, you know, continue to go to encampments, continue to speak to your loved ones, continue to be vocal. Be that Debbie Downer That's very, very important. Let them, don't be afraid to let the room down. Continue to remind folks that there's a genocide happening, a live stream genocide, right? And that Palestine is not a single voter issue. Palestine is everyone's issue. So I want us to keep uplifting that. Continue to make phone calls, continue to go to city council meetings, continue to disrupt, continue. Please don't stop. The Palestinian people are seeing it, and the Palestinian people are appreciating it. And there's one more plug I'd like to plug in. USPCN and PFC have worked with Mecca's Children's, Middle Eastern Children's Alliance, and they do have people on the ground. There's other organizations you could donate to, like PCRF and Heal Palestine, which provides care to children coming from Palestine. But Mecca does have people on the ground, and they are trying to provide services to those on the ground, from mental health to, you know, food services and all that. So please follow those organizations, and again, continue to disrupt and continue to engage in conversation. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, so folks, you've got like probably like 6 minutes. No, I'm kidding. You've got about 7 to 10 minutes to write your letters. And, you know, panels and conferences, it's a big professional yap fest. Everybody's yapping, talk, talking at you from the stage. I'm doing it right now. This is a moment for you to look at the people around you and talk to them. Share your letter with them. These letters will be translated by folks who are a part of this organizing program. And hopefully, not hopefully, but will be given to folks in Palestine and Palestinians here. So this isn't, you're not just writing a letter into the void. Like, this is a real thing, and is a cultural intervention that we're trying to make sure that folks know that we said no. Even though our government is saying yes, we are saying no, and it is on record that we are saying no to this thing. So I'm gonna start the timer. Okay? And we'll have some music for y'all to focus in on. Thanks so much. Okay.
No music.
Y'all, we're just letting folks know this is just time to write. The event isn't over. We have one more speaker and then a close. Understand it is late, but yeah, folks have like 3 or 4 more minutes. Just want to let folks know.
While folks are working on their letters, feel free to continue to work on your letter. But we also want to bring up Ashley Woodard Henderson, who's been a comrade in a struggle for a very long time, who's also going to share her letter that's on her heart with us. So please, Ashley, come up.
Good evening, good people. I know you're writing, but you can do me better than that. Good evening, good people. We're going to fly through this because it's a union hotel. We're not trying to keep people too late. But I am going to ask you if you're willing and able. I know you're writing your letters, but I'm going to ask if you're willing and able to be a part of my letter. Are you willing and able to be a part of my letter?
Yes.
So I'm going to say some stuff, and then I think how I want to do this is if I say something that is a commitment that you can to make, I'm going to ask you to stand and stand with me while I continue to make my commitments. Then at the end, if we have time, we might sing it out, okay? Dear Gaza, my words here now feel insufficient and necessary, but our love for you, our faith in you, our commitment to you is immeasurable and boundless. No man-made border can disconnect us. What I can do is swear the truthfulness of my words and pledge my accountability to the following commitments. In the same way that I won't concede my region, shout out to the South, the hollers and hoods that I call home, or my country of birth to white Christian nationalism or fascism or authoritarianism of any kind. In the same way I won't allow Moms for Inequality, sorry, I mean Moms for Liberty for some, I'm sorry, I mean Moms for Liberty, to erase the truth of my ancestors and elders' fight for Black liberation from the story of how the United States became who it is today, or concede answering the question often asked by Norma Wong, who are we and who are we becoming? I will not concede the answer to that question to the fascist authoritarian faction of the GOP. Y'all know them as MAGA. Or the corporate Democrats of the Democratic National Committee. In the same way, I won't concede my faith to folks who refuse the revolutionary politics of a brown-skinned, woolly-haired Palestinian carpenter named Jesus. In the same way, I won't concede my liberatory vision of a social and economic order that prioritizes human development, our people, our many cultures, and true democracy to talking heads who would rather be right in a way that fractures than righteous and an invitation to principled struggle and collective action. In the same way, I won't let perfection be the enemy of the good or liberalism be the enemy of the prefigurative. I won't create a vacuum in leadership by abdicating my responsibility to say what must be done in this time, even when it's uncomfortable. I will be courageous in the face of criticism. I will be disciplined and grounded and do the best I can to not only have the correct assessment of what time it is on the clock of the world, but to believe in our power here in the United States, to execute a diversity of tactics and a united front strategy led by a multi-ideological left. In the face of deep grief and rage, I will be both emotional and strategic because you and people who suffer here deserve at least this. I won't take the binary bait that blocking the right and building the left can't happen at the same damn time. Because it can. Because it does. In fact, it has to. I will reach to comrades beyond my comfort zone because it's clear that no one tactic, no one sector can win us everything we need, want, and deserve in this season. I won't concede the joy. I won't concede the joy that we still get to experience in this moment of grief, or the grief and rage that can be channeled into change, or waste my humanity through banter that doesn't build movement and bitterness that isn't strategy. I won't be fooled by the distractions of only doing the work of the opposition for them through inaction, infighting, and navel-gazing. I won't allow the colonization of Judaism by Zionism and its spiritual wickedness. I won't fall into the trap of saviorism. I will fight with Palestinians as they fight to liberate themselves. And as Baba Chokwe Lumumba said, if you don't love the people, you'll betray the people. I won't concede Gaza or Ramallah or Hebron or Nabi Saleh or Jenin or every patch of ground where Palestinian refugees find themselves on the journey back home, or any inch of Palestine and every single one of its people from the river to the sea. As they say, we can't hate ourselves. We can't hate this country. We can't hate our world. We can't hate these lefty factions that we've inherited and built. We can't hate our opposition into the versions of ourselves that we can love. But I can be grounded in the liberatory theology that has taught me since before I can remember that victory is mine. Victory is mine. Victory today is mine. I told Zionism, I told Christian nationalism, I told capitalism, I told racism and sexism and xenophobia and ableism and ultra-leftism and liberalism, I told corporatism and heteronormativity, I told every single man-made thing that harms my people to get thee behind. Victory. Victory in justice. Victory in liberation, victory in freedom, in joy and peace and abundance, victory in wholeness, victory in healing and self-determination, victory in sovereignty, victory in a free Palestine and every single acre of this beautiful world and beyond it. And every good thing for every living thing is mine, is ours. The last time I was physically close to you, I sat with Palestinian freedom fighters and we traded freedom songs in English and in Arabic. Today, in spirit, we're gonna try to continue this tradition. I'm gonna ask you all, if you're willing and able, to please stand. Some of you know this song because it was written by my comrade, Nalini Stamp, from the Working Families Party. Woo! Nalini wrote a song called The People Will Rise. I'm gonna teach it to you real quick. It's gotta be real quick, so you're just gonna have to trust me. Repeat after me. Why are we in this situation that brings us down? Your turn.
Why are we in this situation that brings us down?
Can't you see we are losing patience with oppression now?
Can't you see we are losing patience with oppression now?
The people will rise, the people will rise, the people will rise.
The people will rise.
Repeat after me. Why are we in this situation that brings us down? Your turn.
Why are we in this situation that brings us down?
Can't you see we are losing patience with oppression now?
Can't you see we are losing patience with oppression now?
The people will rise, the people will rise, the people will rise.
The people will rise, the people will rise, the people will rise.
Repeat after me. Why are we in this situation that brings us down? Your turn.
Why are we
in this situation that brings us down? My turn. Can't you see we are losing patience with oppression now? Your turn.
Can't you see
we are losing patience with oppression now? My turn. The people will rise, the people will rise, the people will rise. Your turn.
The people will rise, the people will rise, people will
let's sing it together, ready? Why are we in this situation that brings us down? Can't you see we are losing patience with oppression now? The people will rise, the people will rise, the people will rise. The people will rise, the people will rise. I need you to sing it like you believe it. Why are we in this situation that brings us down? Can't you see we are losing patience with oppression now? The people will rise, the people will rise, the people will rise. One more time. The people will rise, the people will rise, the people will rise. Let it be, and so it is.
Give it up one more time for Ashley Woodard Henderson, and give it up for yourselves. We're going to get out of here, but I just want to thank each and every one of you for coming, for bringing your whole heart, your whole mind, your whole soul, for writing, for listening, for letting this experience get up inside of you, and for being with us, all of us together. If you wrote your letter, we ask that you would pass your letter to your left so it gets to the person all the way on the left of your row. So pass it all the way over to your left. That's my right. And the person at the end of your row, just hold on to those letters and someone's going to come pick them up from you, okay? So if you have a letter, you wrote your letter, pass it on over to the left, and the person on that left row will hold on to it so we can pick it up. We want to thank all the speakers. We want to thank everyone who made this possible, the AV team, those who are live streaming, all those who made this possible, all the work that was unseen that made this happen. We want to thank you. We also want to thank this choir, the DD People's Choir, that's going to lead us out in song. Y'all take it away.
We rise, humbly hearted rise, won't be divided, rise, with spirit to guide us, rise.
We rise, humbly hearted rise.
Children rise, elders with wisdom rise, ancestors around us rise.
We rise, all of the children rise,
elders with wisdom,
elders with wisdom rise. Surround us, rise,
we rise, we rise, in hope and prayer,
in hope and prayer,
we find
ourselves in hope and prayer,
we're right here, come on and sing,
in hope
and prayer,
Thanks for listening. If you liked this episode, subscribe to our podcast and to the Haymarket Books YouTube channel, where events like this one are hosted live. And don't forget to check out haymarketbooks.org.